think those kinds of things are quite important to realize, that, that different kinds of effects to different levels of people. You know, and the same thing, you know, the other side of greenwashing is, what are the, you know, business opportunities that people are seeing in this? After all, business delivers the goods and services that we all use. You know, there's going to be some kind of, if you don't like corporations, there's going to be some kind of big thing, big organization delivering, you know, whatever you use on a daily basis for most of us.
Do you think there's enough drama in that story for the media to pick up on it at this stage of information structure?
Oh, I think there's plenty of drama to pick up on it. If anything, I think drama is the problem, because the media will always go for the drama. They won't necessarily go for what's accurate, and certainly not for what's helpful.
So what drama would you see leaking out of this press to get on to, until we start testing it against more extreme scenarios?
Well, if I were a tabloid writer, I would be focusing on sustainable 2050, and my guess would be a red top in the UK would say the world will end in 2050, because that's the way our media tend to spin. So the thing is, knowing that we are looking at a cataclysm of 2050, because that's how they will see, that's how our press would tend to see it.
But that isn't how
that's
we
not
see
the
it.
Story.
I don't disagree
yeah.
with you,
mm-hmm.
but that, but saying how we can make the world a lovely place and sustainable 2050 isn't going to sell the newspapers.
That's my point. Definitely.
Whereas if you say the World Council for Sustainable Development says the world will end in 2050, brackets unless,
mm-hmm.
the unless doesn't hit the headline. So the question then is, what can you do to bring out the unlesses?
Mm.
Would look at television, for example. Could you imagine these two CEOs in a studio with this in the background, and they're talking about the impact and the interest that their corporation had in this or that aspect of it, and the camera able to zoom in on the must-haves in their area?
Well, certainly I can. I suppose the challenge that this Marie Exemplar's work faces is, it is a macro statement in a micro media world.
Yeah.
So, for example,
cool.
So the media would be inclined to pick up any one of those things. So take, I was looking for a bit on population, and you do have in the Yellow Square about contraception available globally.
Yes.
Well, even in the United States, one can only imagine what a headline that would make. So that's what I'm talking about. I'm not trying to be negative. What
well,
I'm
that's
trying
right.
to say
yeah,
is
you're absolutely right.
There's a difference about mm-hmm. how one plays this. And I think the media is in there. It's in the values and behaviours thing.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps it needs teasing mm-hmm. out in terms of how this is managed as part of the education effort. And the education not just channeled at the public,
mm-hmm.
but channeled at the media, because they're going to be channeled through which the public
yes.
to learn about this. And the management of those messages, I think, is going to be critical to getting those mm-hmm. boxes signed off at the appropriate stage.
No, I think we have a major problem with the media, and hugely, not only your tabloids, but the U.S. all over the place. Science is under serious attack in the blogosphere and in the U.S., and including threats of violence to very senior scientists that I know, who are lead authors on the IPCC. And the media want to feature what is the big debate. Well, the big debate that they should be featuring is between 450 and 350 or less, rather than between the deniers and people who are saying that there's anthropogenic origins to climate change.
Which is fine, because even in that conversation, you've got a mitigation in place now.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
right.
And maybe it's the mitigations perhaps that can be fed into that mm-hmm. to
Right,
let's move on to a couple
yes,
of other questions.
One
oh,
at the back, one at the back,
yeah.
and then at the front. Yeah.
Sorry, I joined you late, so you may have covered this. I apologise. I mean, we're talking rather as though it's a homogenous world, and it's anything but. So a large part of the world already starts with a sustainability deficit, and I'm not quite clear how you're addressing that here. I mean, about 2 billion people in the world have less than acceptable living standards, and I'm not sure whether you're aiming to bring them up to level, and of course there'll be a lot more by 2050, or whether it's sustaining the world as it is. And this is one of the ways to get the media message across. I mean, the world may not end for everybody in 2050, but for some people it will end well before that if we don't achieve better ways of doing things for the future.
Yes. I would say that the aspirationally in the creation of the vision in the early stages of the project, there was a recognition of what you're talking about and saying, yes, we have to feed everybody. You know, we have to have houses for them. We have to have health care for them. How it was worked out is variable in different strands because different teams worked on different kinds of back casting. But the agriculture team, for example, were quite interested and thought hard about, well, okay, if we're going to feed 9 billion people, then what are the requirements?
You see?
Yeah.
Just getting a basic nutritional standard
yes.
for everybody.
But we didn't, you know, the people area, you know, which team unfortunately had a different mix of people on it each time. And so it was hard to get a coherent discussion and work on that. So I don't, you know, so there was weaknesses in that area here. Could use some beefing up. So you know, so that this is not a monolithic, even though it looks like it, it's not a monolithic sort of thing. You know, there were teams of people with different levels of capability and knowledge and expertise and so forth behind this. Somebody back there.
Yes, Anna.
Yeah, it may be that I've misunderstood, but this backcasting seems to be very linear through time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas actually, I'm very interested in the work, say, of Basel Track Reporting. Track Reporting, the slow pace of fast change. And he's looking at pre and innovation and post and innovation. So if you look at a situation now, before you want to introduce any innovation, he argues it's very important to recognise that situation has a sort of stable equilibrium with lots of mutually self reinforcing structures and relationships and organisations and trades and so on.
Yep.
And if you want to have the change that you're getting to, for that to be stable, you need to imagine and envision and plan for that situation also to be self-mutually reinforcing and stable.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder whether this sort of linear through time dynamic actually doesn't relate to people's lives or people's business strategies or anything, because where we all are is stuck in a stable equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if we could develop stories, metaphors, business strategies that actually looked at that, whether that might actually enable some movement, because that's where we are, rather than more easily able to relate to this future coming at us from a long way away. Do you see what I mean?
I think I do, yeah. You know, certainly there's one of the what sort of standard assessments of systems analysis is that the system that we have is perfectly adapted to giving us exactly what we have now.
Yep.
So that's the, you know, it's one of the, you know, one of the other, words of wisdom to systems changers is that it's very difficult to change just one thing
exactly.
in a system.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know, I think in the sense of thinking about a vision is a, you know, I think we did a fairly dramatic kind of thing. The dynamics of how to make those changes were not part of the remit that we had or the time and resources that we had. You've got, you know, essentially the 40 people stringing out their time over an 18-month period doing what we could do.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's up to us to do the next steps.
Okay, I mean, carrying on from earlier, to give this project real legitimacy, it seems to me it really needs to engage with civil society and NGOs and people who might have a critical perspective on a business perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And then through that engagement, that might be an avenue to sort of deal with the, engage the media and also sort of the other sort of cultural institutions that could spread this kind of vision. I mean, it does seem to me from doing a lot of work within education for sustainability that it could be an incredible tool to get past some of the real sort of problems that we encounter where people just feel like they can't really sort of acknowledge some of the problems we have environmentally because they can't even see a way of us possibly beginning to deal with them within the current sort of worldview that we presently have. And so actually showing that there are people who have this sort of map, it could be incredibly powerful, but it really will need like more of a sort of cross different types of cultures,
yes.
You know, beyond business to engage. And I also wonder if you were familiar with the massive change project that Bruce Mann did in America,
yes.
Where he brought these, I mean, it's very different, it's very simplistic compared to yours, but I think that the idea of using cultural institutions to teach people and to bring a vision on our greatest challenges would be a great way to...
Well, right, and Bruce, I think, is Canadian. An American, not that he isn't an American, but usually the frequent term. I wanted to say one thing about NGOs. And this is just one case, and it's not. It doesn't cover everything, and it certainly doesn't cover Exxon. And other companies that you might think of. But in 1997, Alcoa did a futures look. And they said, water's gonna be a problem. Well, way ahead of a lot of companies and NGOs and so forth. And as of now, my understanding is that all of their plants are 95% water neutral. Got a university that's 95% water neutral? Got an NGO that is? Maybe a few. Maybe it's the only company. But there are stories and facts like that which show, to me at least, that there's an awful lot of organizations that need to actually practice what they're preaching, and I hope they will. And you know, and there are, but I think the other thing I want to say is there are some leaders in business who are way ahead. You know, imagine the impact. You know, Alcoa isn't even the biggest aluminum company. But it is very large, and it was one of the co-chairs of this project, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, but all of those companies exist within their little. What we're looking at is a whole of society, and when you know it will be people, it will be civil society who put more energy into issues like governance, and
yes.
Those are the people
That's
who true. Understand people. The bigger issues and how people exist outside of like little packages of well-managed companies.
It's very interesting, you know, how you think about politics. There's a former Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration named Robert Reich, who's written a book called Supercapitalism. And one of the insights I think. About it. You remember Clinton and Reich are Democrats, right? Just to clarify. He says, you know, a real problem that we have is that we citizens have three hats. And on the one hand, we are demanding lower and lower prices for all of our goods that are coming. So, and the promotion and the pay of senior executives in companies is partially based on their delivering those kind of prices to us. Secondly, at least in the United States, half of our families own some stock.